This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise Biz Bytes on this Monday, the 2nd of July.
Mm.
We're in July already.
You're right.
This year has flown by.
Yeah.
But this is what we say every year anyway.
Right, but this year it just feels especially quick. I think it just seems, for me anyway, it just seems to roll very, very quickly to July.
I don't know. I feel like it kind of went January and then July. Everything else. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, ladies and gents, as per usual, we've got four stories lined up for you today with some events that we think you might want to check out later on. We're going to be starting off with a story about how some top executives are saying that they don't practice work-life balance because they found something else. Right. They don't work. I'm just kidding. No, it's not that. Then we'll be moving on to how to build a team of rule breakers and why you should, something I can relate to enormously. Frida has a story about how some women deal with sexism and discrimination at the workplace, wrapping up with a story about emotional intelligence skills that seem to be overrated. Then, of course, we have some events that we're going to give to you a little bit later on. And, of course, with the Breakfast Grill replay coming up a little bit later on. Let's start off with this work-life non-balance thing then.
Yes. So there are several people who have said that they found something better than a work balance. This includes Kristen Lemkow, the CMO of JPMorgan Chase. This also includes the co-founder of Power to Fly, Catherine Zaleski, and Jeff Bezos himself, Amazon CEO.
Mm-hmm.
They all say that they do not believe in work-life balance, but they do believe in what they call work-life integration.
Right. It's okay.
Yes.
Semantics then.
Well, not quite. So the idea behind that is what they think of as work-life balance is a separation between work and your home life. Mm. So leaving work at work and then leaving home at home. But what they say is that for work-life integration, since technology has blurred the lines between work and home anyway, you might as well basically integrate both of them together. And it doesn't matter where you do your work things and where you do your home things, so long as you remain effective at both things.
Yep.
So okay. Yeah.
It makes sense. Not a new thing.
Not for us, I don't think. I think depending on which industry you're in.
Which industry? I guess what sort of organizations, if it practices that, you know, or they encourage it. I know for the longest time when I was working in an MNC, I felt I had work-life integration in the sense that I was working from home and, you know, meet all your deadlines.
Right.
But then my, you know, son was in school and preschool and all that, and I wanted to be with him. And, you know, you just make sure that when he comes back, try not to, you know, have any teleconference calls during that period, right? So, and then if I need to, I make calls late at night as well, right? So it was really, so long as you meet the KPIs and that sort of thing, it is really possible.
Mm. Yeah. For example, with Kristen Lemkow, she says that I'm at my son's soccer game yesterday on Mother's Day in the driving rain in 45 degrees. He's on the bench. I can get a couple of emails done. He's playing. I'm totally there.
Mm. Right.
So it's basically, you know, as long as you get things done and you can handle both things at the same time, you know, go ahead and do them as well. And someone else said, you know, are your goals working together or is it impossible to achieve your personal and professional goals? If your professional goal is to start your own business and a personal goal is to travel or try a new hobby, look for ways that they could work together.
Mm.
So Jeff Bezos thinks of this as instead of seeing work and life as two integrated parts, see it as a circle. Sorry. Bezos says it's more productive to see work and life as two integrated parts and as a circle instead of a balance.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I think that obviously, I mean, personally, I do have a barrier in terms of like I won't, for example, check my emails after a certain time just because I will then get in a loop of constantly thinking that there are things to be done. But I do also do work at home and I do some home things at work. Like, you know, I think that's not unhealthy as long as you know, like, what is appropriate for both situations.
I think when, you know, Jeff Bezos here said that the word work-life balance is debilitating. I think when you know it's not consuming you.
Yes.
Right? You know, work is not one element is consuming you and you're able to do that. I mean, like, for example, I look at mails late at night and everything and it's okay, right? Because I'm already in that frame. I'm ready to look at things. My mind is clear. I've sorted out some other things, you know, so that's good.
Yeah. All right, let's ask people at home then. How do you deal with your work-life balance? Yeah?
018-789-8899
or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Are you one of these people that check your emails? We've asked this question before, I know. But do you switch off after a certain period of time?
Yeah.
You know, do you get to like 5 o'clock, 5.30, that's it. No emails, no nothing until the next day. I know one of the problems that I have, and it's almost like a fear. Sunday evenings around about 8 o'clock when I know that I'm coming back to work.
Your brain to sweat.
My brain starts to sweat and I'm like, I have to check my work emails. You know, because you've left them over the weekend and there's a part of you that's going, what if I miss something important that I need to know about on Monday morning?
Yeah, I guess basically it's, do you believe that you can have work-life integration without it being unhealthy?
Yeah. And you were right, Chris, in turning off your notifications for your email and stuff and, you know, making sure that doesn't interrupt with that time that you have outside of work. Yeah, let us know. 018-789-8899 then. Keeping on a theme of breaking set rules, then, I suppose. Every organization, as we know, has its rules and policies. They're put in place for various reasons. But at times, those rules can be inconvenient and even counterproductive. They might end up actually constraining you from executing on your company's mission and serving your customers in the best way that you can. Just because something is always done a certain way doesn't mean it can't be done better, right? It's important to challenge yourself and the people on your team to question things and always look for ways to improve, not just follow rules because that's the way it is. So not too long ago, this guy who has written for Fast Company, his name is John Hall, he'd noticed trends in PR that signaled the field was starting to align a little bit more with content marketing. And a few trusted clients and partners had asked whether PR was something that, you know, he could help with. So their goal, like most businesses, was to provide the best service and experience for their customers. But they knew they'd have to work really hard. Sticking to the traditional way of doing things, you know, just didn't quite work for them. So the team took on this challenge of thinking through how they could offer a new service to their clients when it didn't conform to existing processes. The existing customers had been able to add PR to their content packages, and they had won new customers who truly needed help. But here are some of the ways that you can build a team of rule breakers and perhaps why you should do it. So number one is be prepared to explain the why. Too many traditional workplace rules seem totally arbitrary. Honestly, why require all employees to wear a suit day in, day out? For every rule in your company, make sure there's a legitimate, easily explainable answer as to why a no, because I said so, won't work, you know? So when employees understand why a rule is in place, they know when to follow that rule and when it's appropriate to break it. Rules should only be broken when the results will make the company and your client better than they would have been if the rule had been observed. I mean, let's take, for example, BFM.
Right,
you know, we have a, let's say, smart casual approach to our dress here at the office. You'll see people in shirts, you'll see people in t-shirts, dresses, skirts, whatever. There's two things that we generally say no to. Shorts in the workplace. Sorry, three things. Shorts in the workplace, slippers, and
caps.
And I think that's a relatively fair, you know, assessment of what you should wear in the workplace. I mean, we deal with CEOs, but we also deal with musicians and artists and actors and one thing or another.
Right.
So I think it's fair that you kind of reflect the people that come in and that you deal with, right?
But then there's also Malik Ali, who's always in his, his polo shirt.
Polo shirt and his chinos.
BFM polo shirt and
for
chinos.
Sure.
And he's always in that, regardless of whatever circumstances.
Exactly. Right, number two, humanize yourself and be genuine. If you want to build a team of rule breakers, the last thing you should do is try to demote anybody with fear. If people are scared of you, they'll be much less likely to ever defy your judgment, no matter how much benefit they feel it will bring to the company. Instead, you've got to humanize yourself and share your thoughts with your team. You can do this by, you know, investing in your brand and creating content that reflects who you really are and the vision you have for the company. Don't paint that you're perfect. You're not a visionary. Just use your thought leadership content, you know, as an opportunity. Right, number three. Accept that mistakes will happen. If you're going to show your employees that you're human, it's just as important to understand they're human too and not expect perfection from them. Nothing stifles greatness more than fear of failure.
Right.
So rather than focusing on the failure itself, support and encourage creativity in your organization. Sometimes people will try something new and it won't work, but a good leader will accept that and help people find those teachable moments within mistakes to learn from the future. So truly successful teams are comfortable pushing boundaries and breaking rules to achieve their goals. Leaders should create an environment in which their employees feel safe and even encouraged to break that mold. It's best done by explaining the reasoning behind existing policies, humanizing yourself, accepting failure, and encouraging creativity. I mean, they all make sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I sorry, go on, Chris.
I mean, basically, the way to improve things is by doing things differently.
Right.
That's a fact. I mean, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different or better results is the definition of madness.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't have improvement without innovation. You can't have innovation without breaking some rules occasionally. Yeah. That's just a fact.
I mean, I remember a workplace that I was at and many, many years ago. And when I first walked in, the first thing that I saw were people in suits. And I was at that age where I didn't even own a suit. Mm. Right? And so I went out, I spent a bunch of money, I bought myself an off-the-rack, ill-fitting suit and went to work. I got into my workspace and the guy who was in there, my then leader, was wearing jeans and a T-shirt. Mm. And I walked in, I'm like, oh. And he's like, no, we don't do that in here. Outside, with the corporate heads, they'll be wearing suits. Out in here, where we're dealing with people on a day-to-day basis, we want you to be comfortable.
Right.
We want you to enjoy yourself. We want you to feel as though you're not, you know, trapped in this. So I completely wasted my money on a suit that didn't fit.
Oh.
But, you know, I learned a valuable lesson.
Yes.
You know. Right. Get in touch, folks, if you want to talk to us about this work-life balance, whether or not you found a better way of dealing with it. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let's have a short music break. We've got Ben Folds up next with Zach and Sarah here on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm joined in the studio by
Frida Liu
and Christine Wong.
As usual, with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. We've started off with a couple of stories, how some executives in banking, retail, and tech are saying that they don't practice a work-life balance because they've found something better. It is
work-life integration.
Mm-hmm. There you go. If you kind of subscribe to the idea or you've got something a little bit different, let us know. Let's have a chat about it. We are on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or we're on Twitter at BFM Radio. Then had a story about how to build a team of rule breakers and why you should. We'll post that up on our links with the podcast a little bit later on. Now moving on to a bit of a story about how some women have dealt with sexism and discrimination at the workplace.
Right. Anyway, I'm going to read some of the stories out here. And I was just thinking, like, in my work life, have I ever faced these sort of discrimination? I would say no, but there are little things, sort of subtle things. And there's a terminology for it. It's called microaggression.
Yes.
Oh.
Microaggression. And so I'll read this. This is Kay Clark. Who's the founder and chairman and CEO of the USA Network. She was invited to a media lunch for the Augusta National Golf Tournament in 82, and she ran into a bit of a snag, it says here. Women weren't allowed into the dining room on the second floor of the club. So she said, I was talking to Hort Hardin, the chairman of the Masters Tournament and the Augusta National Golf Club, and we got to the top of the stairs. And he looks at me and says, "Okay, we've got a problem." So at this point, Klopovitz says she didn't miss a beat and asked what they were going to do about it. What we did is we went down to a trophy room where women were allowed, and we ate there for the next 10 years.
Wow.
So the club didn't admit women as members until 2012. So, and I think there are some places in Malaysia that are still like this, certain clubs I know.
Yep.
So this happened in the 80s, and Klopovitz, who's currently the founder and chairman of the investment firm Springboard Enterprises, maintains, it's important for us to understand that these things still happen, and you just got to figure out on the fly at the moment how to change that situation. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we can get very aggro about these sort of things, but I guess there are ways around it. We can try to change it. We can keep that conversation going, but there's still ways, right? And it is unfortunately right. In the course of writing the story, this came out in Fast Company, she said that I learned that not only are they continually regulated to pick up office housework, but professional women at all levels are routinely talked over at meetings, have others take credit for their ideas, and get comments like, "You're nagging me like a wife."
Wow.
Okay, when they ask a male colleague to do something, these and other microaggressions breed a toxic culture that can make female employees feel unsafe and want to quit, even if they love the work they do.
Hang on, right. Have either of you experienced this microaggression, you know?
Not with Richard Bradbury.
Not with Richard Bradbury, hopefully.
I have not experienced microaggression on based on my gender that I can remember, but I have experienced microaggression based on my race when I was in the UK.
Right.
Mm. A great example of this is when people are like, "Oh my gosh, your English is so good." And that is a microaggression because they don't expect my English to be good, because how could an Asian person's English be good? Oh my God, it's mind-blowing, right? So that's an example of, like, it doesn't quite, it's not really, it's not intentional, it's not intended to be harmful, but it is based on a certain conception of what I'm supposed to be like.
It's a presumption.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's like a big one.
I mean, I've had, I think over the years, works, you know, subtle comments and things like that, but
I've seen it in meetings here,
right?
You know,
right.
Outside of BFM, right. I have seen
and
it.
And do you then answer back, or do you then just sort of like, you know, is it worth, you know, worth answering back, or just like, okay, I'm not going to sweat over the small stuff, right? Just little things that, oh, but women should be doing certain things and all that, right?
Yeah. But I am a big believer in calling it out if I see it and if I hear it.
Right? Yeah. So here's another experience. Kathy Schuster, who's a sales and marketing national executive with Dow DuPont Performance Building Solutions. So she was saying that she's familiar with this dilemma of being excluded on typically all male excursions. So in the construction industry, building relationships are foremost, and those relationships are by nature long term. So she said many times these opportunities to connect happen during golf games, fishing, or skeet shooting. I absolutely had to step up to be included, making clear that I was interested and willing, even if it was an activity that was new to me. So she took up saltwater fishing and all that, and I found that, you know, they are often really fun and no one is judging the newbie. So there's also the part that we have to play, right? In fact, the others often try to help, and that begins to build rapport.
Right.
So we also can't be standing, you know, on the pedestal and expecting things to change around us. You also have to play the part. So if you're really skilled, make a lasting impression. In addition to creating some of the strongest industry partnerships, she learned that being fully and consistently engaged, the first step to overcoming any potential gender bias. Show up every time, do what you said you would do, and that holds true for men and women alike. And I think that's the thing at the end of the day, right? I mean, these things can happen, and if you always remember me, not because I'm a woman, but because I'm able to deliver on my work, that at the end of the day will stand true over time.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one thing. Another story, this is a place, Heather Combs, who's the chief current revenue officer of Three Pillars. She found herself in for more than 20 years working in male-dominated industry. So she says she's witnessed her fair share of subtle and not-so-subtle aggressions. So when she started a career in sales, catering mostly to general counsels to large corporations, most companies, most positions were generally filled by older white men, many of whom behaved as if corporate America was one giant good old boys club. So I think that's also slowly changing, but, you know. So she said, often I walked in a room and learned that I was no longer Heather, but rather honey, sweetheart, babe. I think more or less of that happening. So back then, her strategy was simply smile, ignore the comment, and seize the chance to exceed expectations by speaking matter of factly through agenda, right? And the confidence was often rewarded with sales success, and continues to use it today. I don't hedge my language when I'm presenting idea or product. I speak boldly and without every equivocation, right? So I think that's, at the end of the day, you're going to get pockets of that still happening, right? And so, you know, just speak boldly. Don't, you know, play the gender game as well.
But I also think that it's important to be able to assess the situation before you do that as well. It might not always be in your best interest to speak up. Like, unfortunately, this is a product of very systemic and institutional bias that everyone has to some level. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, of course, you know, you should be able to speak up, but it's also difficult to speak up when already, let's say, in a meeting. I read a study that apparently, I can't remember exactly who did this, but it was, they asked a group of men and women to be in a room and discuss something for a certain number of time. And then they asked each gender, they were like, how much do you think you spoke? And the men thought that the women spoke 50% of the time when they only spoke 30% of the time. So it's you know, they don't even realize that they're being biased towards you. It just happens.
The unconscious bias.
Exactly. So I think it's important to call it out when it's appropriate, but also to be careful, because occasionally it might backfire. If you are, you know, too aggressive or assertive, they might, because of this unconscious bias, identify that as antisocial behavior as well.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah.
Things like asking questions like, you know, do you plan to have children during...
I don't know if it's illegal in America, but I don't know if it's illegal in Malaysia.
Right.
People still do it. And, you know, I remember even with Jermaine B, our community manager, when she joined us about 2-3 years ago, and she said, I was worried telling Malik that I was pregnant. And Malik was like, what's the issue? Right? So there's that as well. So she said, and this resulted in starting her own business. So for her, in this case, adversity became the foundation for her leadership skills, my values, my ability to focus, and my sense of responsibility. So, and I don't think it's, I'm not too sure whether it's a law here not to ask, but that's still a big issue at the end of the day. She said also one of the things is that that you can also choose that you don't have to do business with people who are not respectful of you, right?
Yeah.
There are plenty of others out there.
Agreed.
So that's one thing, right? And this is another lesson, again. This is the Daily Burn CEO, Tricia Han, who took the helm in late 2017 as a first-time CEO. So her former college roommate is a brilliant air quotes, Asian American woman who successfully climbed the executive ladder in the finance world. Even she had experiences of walking to meetings and having people assume she was the secretary. So I asked her what tactics she used to overcome bias and, just as importantly, to avoid feeling demoralized. So her roommate simply said, not everyone will want to work with you, but some will. And you have to recognize the people that are willing to engage and cultivate those relationships.
There you go.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's take a break. If you want to get in touch with the show, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. We've got one more story coming up before we give you some events to check out. It's about emotional intelligence skills that are overrated. This is really interesting. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong,
Frida Liu.
Again, we're with you all the way until 1 o'clock, another 25 minutes or so. We've got one more story coming up before we give you some events that we'd like to check out. We started off with a story about how people in banking, retail, and techs, the top executives there, are saying they don't practice work-life balance because they found something better. It is called work-life integration.
Mm-hmm.
You say potato, I say potato. Then we had how you can build a team of rule breakers and why you should do that. Frida then gave us a story about some women who are dealing with sexism and discrimination at work and how they deal with it. Now, Chris has a story about emotional intelligence skills that are overrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on. I'm hoping in one of these phrases in there will be mindfulness.
Yep.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Yes.
Okay, so... having emotional intelligence is kind of another way of saying having soft skills. And a lot of people, put a big emphasis on having soft skills for the workplace now, things that are transferable and to understand, for example, how to be a good listener, how to have empathy, how to manage stress. And those are important, but there are some elements of emotional intelligence that are maybe a little bit overrated for this day and age. So the first one of that is to have high self-esteem. Now, okay, obviously don't, to have a good idea of your self-esteem is still important. But the problem is sometimes too much self-esteem can inflate your ego, and it becomes harder for you to come to terms with how others really see you, particularly when it comes to your flaws and not so flattering parts. Mm. So there's a thin line between having high self-esteem and being arrogant, essentially. And what is suggested is to strive for self-clarity instead.
Ah.
So see yourself and situations through a non-emotional lens and acknowledge your imperfections that others see in you. So if it doesn't come naturally to you and you are like on the really high end of the self-esteem scale, think of a time when you felt low in self-confidence and let yourself feel feelings, but then step back and think, has this happened to others? And you might realize that your flaws are not so embarrassing and are easier to accept after all.
I'll give you an example of self-esteem. So apparently my son's youth coach said that my son doesn't have self-esteem issues, right? And that's not a good thing, because whether he passes the fields exam, he has no issues.
Mm.
So then I have to sit down with him and give him some self-clarity on, it matters.
Right. Yeah, it does matter.
Yeah, it's just to be aware. Like, obviously, don't put yourself down and celebrate your successes, but also be aware of your flaws so that you can continue to work on them instead of being blind to them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there's a beautiful point to be made there. I mean, when I was younger, I had horrible self-esteem. It was crippling almost. And then I went through a performing arts course and did something like that, which did the exact opposite. And for a brief period of time, I thought I was the bee's knees.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely did, because I was getting all of these roles and everything was happening. And I'm like, this is so good.
You went on the other side.
I went to the other side. And I needed somebody to say to me, just take a step back, be a bit clear about things. And it really helped me out. You just need somebody sometimes just to put you in check.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes that person has to also be you.
Yeah.
Now, the second thing is positive thinking. Now, in a world driven by fear and negative headlines, optimism can seem like an attractive attribute. And it's easy to see why. When you know how to turn obstacles into opportunities, the inevitable challenges of life can seem less daunting to face. But there is a time when too much optimism isn't necessarily a good thing. When you're overly optimistic about achieving a goal, you're less likely to work hard towards it, and that makes you less likely to achieve it, because in your brain you're like, well, it's gonna happen. So you don't actually put any work in, because you're sure it's going to happen anyway, right? So those who skew more pessimistic about reaching their goals may be more likely to achieve them, not least because their self-doubt also pushes them to work harder to reach them. When you really want something, you're better off thinking that you won't get it than assuming you will.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean that you should constantly dwell on the worst case scenarios, but by having a plan of what you'll do if it does happen, you'll probably end up mitigating the risk and it better. And this is something that I am fully on board for, because some people might say that I am a pessimist. But the thing is that I like to be prepared. That's kind of what I think of. I like to, what I say is I hope for the best, but I prepare for the worst. And I think that's like a realistic way of looking at things, instead of being like, okay, so let's say it's like, oh, I'm going to get this and this and this and this and this achievements by this time. It's more like, okay, I want to get them done. I'm going to set out a plan. If I don't get them done, I know that I have a backup plan. I can tell people that I might not be able to, I can set a precedent for myself, Instead of just being like, yeah, okay, it's going to be great, and then not actually thinking about the consequences of what might happen just in case it doesn't quite pan out.
Right.
So that's another one.
Okay. Yeah. No, when I think of positive thinking, though, I mean, it is, I think of solution mode.
Yes.
Okay, so that would be like, okay, so this has happened, right? Okay, it's not how I want it to happen. Now, this has happened. What can I do about it? Now, let's plan A. Now, if this doesn't happen, then what's plan B, right?
Yes.
So that's that, because I guess when you get pessimistic and you're crippled and you can't take the next step, I think that's more dangerous. So when I look at positive thinking, I'm just thinking solution mode.
Maybe a better way to phrase this would be naive optimism. In a sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And the way to phrase the solution is more like practical pessimism. So there you go. With the third thing that it might be a bit overrated is mindfulness.
Yay! That word.
So mindfulness is sometimes treated as the be-all and end-all solution to the stresses of modern life. But just as too much technology is bad for you, too much mindfulness isn't so great either. What mindfulness is supposed to be is the act of focusing attention and observing the present moment without a lot of mental dialogue and interpretation. But your brain isn't always wired to focus all of the time. When you give it space to wander and drift, that's when you're letting your thoughts incubate, and when you're more likely to come up with a solution to the problem that's been bugging you all day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So,
Richard, why are you daydreaming?
The idea is that mindfulness and mindlessness should coexist. You benefit from the lightning strike of creativity, but then you want to be able to analyze the potential and drawbacks of your spontaneous ideas. So next time you meditate and focus on your surroundings, allow a few minutes where you let your thoughts wander freely without forcing yourself to go back to the breath.
Okay, so sometimes like all these words, right, are these just catchphrases? Like when I think of mindfulness, again, that's my spin on it.
Yes.
It's being reflective.
Yes.
Right? It's being reflective, you know, how you do it, whether it's through breathing or through whatever, you know, something has happened. Reflect on what has happened. What can you do about it? And if you need that time away, that space away, that's great. You know, so these are the tools to help you.
Yes.
But it's always be reflective of your actions.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely. And then the last one is willpower. So there is a misconception that productive people have strong willpower, discipline, and self-control. But research from Duke University indicates that the more you exercise self-control, the bigger drain on brain structures that support recall and consequently productivity. So, for example, New Year's resolutions. People resolve to lose weight and eat healthy, but rely too much on their willpower and inevitably fail.
Right.
Fact of the matter is that willpower isn't always necessarily the solution. If you design your environment differently, however, you don't have to rely so much on willpower. For example, if you have a snack cupboard, maybe replace that with a fruit bowl. And that doesn't affect your willpower, but it just changes your environment so that you don't have to use willpower so much. So this is Brian Wansink, who is author of Slimmer by Design, Mindless Eating Solutions, says that what works are behavioral tools people can use to change what they select without knowing if it's good or bad for them. Social scientist Joseph Grenny has also said that focus on creating systems in your life that set you up for success, whether it's a support system or you motivate yourself with small rewards instead of just blind willpower, you'll probably find you will get much further.
Willpower never works.
And for
me,
that's
terrible. My willpower is terrible.
Yeah, for me, that's definitely true. Like, instead of like just kind of blindly just being like, but why don't I want to work on this? It's putting myself in a situation where I want to work on it.
Mm. Okay, so I mean, you know, she was talking about New Year resolutions, right? People resolve to lose weight and eat healthy. So what happens in my mindfulness and self-awareness and all this sort of thing is like, okay, I will say that, you know, I want to, so it's not so much I want to lose weight, but I want to be healthier.
Yes.
And what means being healthier is to be able to do that. So, and if I like certain things and food and all that, I don't deprive myself of that because I, okay, but I don't eat as much.
Yeah.
Right, so that's so you don't then, you know, go all crazy suddenly when you're
still getting what you want. It's just on a lesser
amount. And that's where the mindfulness comes in and say, yeah, I like this, but I'll instead of a full plate, maybe a quarter of it.
Yeah, and even things like, for example, like I used to be the person that would just go the whole day without drinking water and be like, then why do I have a headache? Oh, what a mystery. And now I just have a bottle of water on my desk. It's really as simple as that. It's just that the fact that I have a bottle of water on my desk reminds me like, oh, look, I can just drink from this bottle whenever I want.
Ding, ding, ding.
Then I'm really hydrated and nice.
All right, time for a break. We've got some music coming up from Everclear. When we get back, we'll give you some suggestions of events that you might want to check out a little bit later on in the week, followed by, of course, our Breakfast Grill replay. That's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. You listen to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up for this edition. But of course, we've got some events that we think you might want to check out later on this week. So we've got a big one to start off with.
It's happening on Thursday, Friday, which is the 4th and 5th July. This is Wild Digital. It's going to be over, obviously, 2 days. Prize is $1,500 to $2,000 US.
Wow.
Held at Hilton KL. So this year's theme is Inspire, Connect and Disrupt. And it is Southeast Asia's premier tech conference. So over 800 CEOs, founders and investors will be gathering to hear companies like Grab, Nasdaq, Facebook, Microsoft, Airbnb. Who else, Christine?
So the keynote speaker is Patrick Grove, who is the co-founder and group CEO of Catcher Group. Also, Mark Britt, co-founder and group CEO of iFlix, is going to be there. Joel Neal, who is the founder and CEO of Fave, is also going to be there. Jonathan Wines, co-founder and CEO of Damakan as well. So quite a lot of cool peoples.
There's some big names there.
Yeah, some really big names.
Worth the price tag, I think.
Okay.
You know, if you can afford it, get to that. It'd be something worth watching.
So it's wilddigital.com for more information.
Okay, moving on to number two.
Yes, number two is called Techstar Startup Weekend Kuala Lumpur Asia Pacific University from the 6th to the 8th of July. So I believe that is Friday to Sunday.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it starts Friday at 6:30 p.m., finishes on Sunday at 9 p.m. And the price is anywhere from 30 ringgit 0.75 for some reason to 61.50.
I know. I don't quite odd know prices, what's right?
The
yes.
Decimals, but it's an interesting event. So it's happening, obviously, at Asia Pacific University. And what it is, it's a startup weekend, which is a 54-hour event designed to provide superior experiential education for technical and non-technical entrepreneurs, beginning with Friday night pitches and continuing through brainstorming, business plan development, and basic prototype creation. Startup weekends culminate on a Sunday night demo and presentation. So the idea is basically, if you don't know what to do and you want to have a startup, you can go to this to have a very kind of crash course startup creation
54
thing.
Hours of
pure
intense, pure bliss. That's what's potato, potato.
Startup
right?
stamina.
It is startup stamina. Right. Yes. That's all the time that we have for today. I'd want to thank Frida Liu, of course, and Christine Wong for joining me on the show again. My name is Rich Bradbury. Before we go, of course, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. Now, following the upheaval of G14 and the loss of confidence in Barrison National, how have the UMNO party faithful reacted? The Breakfast Grill dissected the results of the recently concluded party elections and the future direction of UMNO on the opposition bench. With their panel, it was Nurul Ashikina Shamsuri, UMNO member, and Ben Sufian from the Merdeka Center. That was all happening this morning. It's coming up again after the 1 o'clock news. We'll quickly run through what we covered today, though, just in case you missed any part of this show, so you can download the podcast a little bit later on. We started off with
how top execs in banking, retail, and tech are saying that they don't practice work-life balance because they practice work-life integration instead.
Then we spoke about how to build a team of rule breakers and why you should.
Mm-hmm. And there were some tips and how some women have dealt with sexism and discrimination at work.
Yeah, and then we wrapped up with how there are four emotional intelligence skills that are a little bit overrated. And also, just as a quick note, coming up after the Breakfast Grill replay today is Raise Your Game. And it's actually an interview that I did with Mark Laudy, who is the managing director of Hongbao Media and also a former CNBC anchor. And we talked about how important it is for CEOs to be media savvy. So do give that a listen later at 1:30.
There you go. Don't forget, if you like any of these stories and you want to know a little bit more about them, the links will be pasted up on our Facebook page. Check it out all there and listen to the podcast at your leisure. That's all the time we have for today then. We're going to have some music to take us out of the show. It is the Black Keys with Run Right Back here on Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.